Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Cigna Oxygen Ask the Contractor teleconference. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ranja Rowland. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Tina. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Government Services Ask the Contractor teleconference regarding oxygen. I am Ranja Rowland with Provider Outreach and Education. I would like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Again, your participation helps us to identify issues or concerns that are important to you so that we can better meet your needs as a supplier. Cigna Government Services is pleased to be the first to provide education regarding oxygen payment changes, and our education efforts include today's call as well as webinars in the coming weeks. Today's call is dedicated to suppliers that bill oxygen claims to Medicare. Because today's call is specialized for oxygen suppliers, we ask that all questions be limited to those concerning oxygen coverage and payment. For those suppliers on today's call that may not be oxygen suppliers or have general inquiries, we will host a general Ask the Contractor teleconference on Wednesday, December 10th at 1 o'clock p.m., and that is Central Time. During today's call, we will discuss the latest changes affecting oxygen suppliers, such as changes in Medicare payment for oxygen and oxygen equipment. Joining us today are additional representatives from our Provider Outreach and Education Department and our Operations Department. In anticipation of questions that cannot be addressed by Cigna Government Services as a contractor, we do have representatives from CMS present on today's call to address those questions. Please keep in mind that we are not able to answer questions about individual claims issues. If you have any individual claims issues, please contact our provider contact center at 866-270-4909. To check claim status, you may call the Interactive Voice Response or IVR system at 866-238-9650. We do want to let you know today's call is being recorded, and playback of today's call will be available on the Jurisdiction C website. The minutes from today's call will also be posted to the Jurisdiction C website no later than December 22nd. A listserv message will be sent to notify providers of the recording as well as the minutes. Please be sure to sign up for the Cigna Government Services listserv if you are not currently signed up to ensure that you are receiving recent Medicare information that may affect you as a supplier. Let's begin with some key points regarding oxygen payment and billing issues. Oxygen and oxygen equipment are currently paid on a fee schedule basis. The beneficiary is responsible for coinsurance and deductibles. The rental payment covers the equipment, contents, maintenance, and supplies, and accessories such as tubing or mouthpiece, and other services necessary for furnishing oxygen and oxygen equipment. Based on the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005, monthly payments for oxygen and oxygen equipment are limited to 36 months of continuous use, after which the equipment title transferred to the beneficiary. As now required by the Medicare Improvement for Patients and Providers Act of 2008, or also known as MIPA, there are new oxygen payment rules and supplier responsibilities regarding oxygen. Section 144 B of MIPA repealed a provision mandated by the Deficit Reduction Act, which required a supplier of oxygen equipment to transfer title of the equipment to the beneficiary at the end of a 36-month rental period. The new provision repeals the transfer ownership and permits suppliers to retain ownership of the oxygen equipment following the 36-month rental cap. Section 414.226 of CMS regulations require the supplier who furnished the oxygen equipment in the first month to continue furnishing the oxygen equipment for the entire 36-month period, with certain exceptions such as when the beneficiary relocates outside the service area, when the beneficiary elects to obtain oxygen equipment from another supplier, or in certain emergency situations granted by the DME MAC or CMS. Section 414.226 also prevents suppliers from switching oxygen modalities during the 36-month period in cases such as from liquid oxygen to a concentrator. There are exceptions to this regulation in the event the physician orders different equipment or the beneficiary chooses newer technology and an ABN has been signed. The following provisions apply after the 36-month cap has been reached. The supplier is required to continue furnishing the equipment, supplies, accessories, and contents, and for ensuring the equipment is in good working order for any period of medical need for the remainder of the 5-year reasonable useful lifetime of the equipment. The supplier who furnished the liquid or gaseous oxygen equipment during the 36-month rental period is responsible for furnishing the oxygen contents used with the supplier-owned oxygen equipment for any period of medical need for the remainder of the useful lifetime of the equipment. Medicare will pay for oxygen contents for any gaseous or liquid oxygen equipment. Suppliers should continue to use codes E0441 through E0444 in order to bill and receive payment for furnishing oxygen contents. Medicare can pay for a general maintenance and servicing visit for concentrators for transfilling equipment in 2009, which must take place 6 months after the end of the 36-month rental period. This payment will be made if the supplier visits the beneficiary home, performs any necessary maintenance and servicing, and inspects the equipment to ensure that it will function safely for the next 6 months. Other than this general maintenance and service payment, no other payment will be allowed for any repair or maintenance and servicing of supplier-owned equipment, including any replacement part furnished as part of any repair, maintenance, and service of oxygen. The supplier is responsible for furnishing all of the same items and services after the 36-month rental period as furnished during the rental period with no additional charge to the beneficiary. Payment is not allowable for supplier pickup or disposal of oxygen tanks or cylinders that are no longer needed. In discussing beneficiary relocation, if the beneficiary relocates before the end of the 36-month rental period, they should work with their supplier to make arrangements to continue receiving oxygen from a new supplier at his or her new place of residence. If the beneficiary relocates after the 36-month rental period, the supplier is required to continue furnishing the oxygen and oxygen equipment and therefore must make arrangements for the beneficiary to continue receiving oxygen services at their new place of residence. Please note, effective January 1st, 2009, a fee schedule reduction of 9.5% applies to oxygen rental payments. Now we'll look at the useful lifetime of the equipment. In accordance with Section 414.210, the reasonable useful lifetime of durable medical equipment, including oxygen equipment, begins on the date that the equipment was first delivered to the beneficiary. The reasonable useful lifetime of oxygen equipment furnished to beneficiaries on December 31, 2005, was not adjusted to begin anew on January 1, 2006, to correspond with the start date of the 36-month rental period. Therefore, in these situations, the equipment's reasonable useful lifetime may end at any point during or after the 36-month rental period. The information provided during today's call can be found in MedLearn Matters article S as in Sam, E as in Edward, 0840. You may also reference the Federal Register located on the CMS website, and that is www.cms.hhs.gov. This concludes the update portion of today's call. As a reminder, the recording and minutes from this call will be posted to the Cigna Government Services website. And that website address is www.cignagovernmentservices.com, and you may select the DME MAC Jurisdiction C homepage. In just a moment, we will open the lines for your questions. Please keep in mind, again, that we will not be able to answer questions about individual claims or general inquiries. If you have a question regarding a specific claim, you may contact the Provider Contact Center at 866-270-4909. And again, we would like to take this opportunity to thank you for participating in today's call, and we will now take your questions.
Thank you. And if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Also, please deactivate any mute function to be sure your signal can reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate your line is open, and we do ask that you please state your name before posing your question. Once again, that is star 1 for a question. We'll pause a moment to assemble our roster. And we'll take our I'll take our question from our first questioner. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. My name is Patty with Health Services of Miami. And my question was, so you had mentioned that we are responsible after the 36-month cap. If the patient moves outside of our area, we're responsible to continue servicing them with oxygen. So, in other words, we might have to set them up with another company wherever they're at. But how would it work as far as reimbursement to that other company?
Okay, I'm sorry. And your name was Patty?
Patty, yes.
Hi, Patty. This is
Hi.
With that, in regards to the beneficiary location,
right?
With that, you can contract with a provider in that area if it is outside of or in a new place of residence. You can contract with a supplier in that area. Only one provider will be paid for either for the maintenance and servicing or the content refill. So at that point, like I said, you may want to contract with a provider in that area.
But do you worry that there might be providers that will be unwilling to do it for a maintenance fee because they'd have to provide the concentrator on a monthly basis? Let's say the patient moved and they're not coming back to our area, so it'll be 2 years that they'll only be able to bill a maintenance fee. So that might be hard for us as a supplier to find somebody willing to do that in another region where we're not even familiar with the companies in the area.
Yes, and that may be a concern that we would hear from the supplier community.
Right. Are they going to address that, or are they looking into?
If CMS would like to, if there are any additional thoughts they would like to add, feel free to do so.
Okay, because that's the one thing that when I saw that was part of the rule, I found that would be probably next to impossible to find a company willing to do that for a maintenance fee, which was my other question. Do you know what the maintenance fee will be?
The reimbursement for?
The reimbursement, right, for the maintenance, yeah, every 6 months?
Yes, just a moment. Let me locate that.
Thank you.
Okay, Patty, the reimbursement, it would be 2 units of the E-1340,
mm-hmm.
And, of course, depending on the state that you're in, and I'm not sure what state you said you were.
In Florida.
It would be $1,746.
For two units at $1,746 each unit?
I'm sorry, I missed the last part of your question.
Oh, because you mentioned 2 units. It's 2 units at $1,746 a unit?
Per unit, yes.
And then does that include are we supposed to charge separately for the cannulas, or that's included in that maintenance fee? The cannulas and the humidifiers, filters, whatnot?
Yeah, that information we do not know currently.
Oh, they don't have, okay, they haven't decided that. All right, well, thank you very much. That was it.
Hi, this is Joel Kaiser from CMS. I can respond to the question about the furnishing the oxygen after the 36-month cap for a beneficiary who's located outside the normal service area of the supplier. We discussed that scenario in the interim final rule in the preamble, and we also discussed payment for maintenance and servicing after the cap for certain equipment and the rationale for the determination as far as what was reasonable and necessary and what was not reasonable and necessary. But getting back to the furnishing, you know, responsibilities for furnishing equipment after the 36-month cap, the law very clearly mandates that the supplier furnishing the equipment for the 36-month period must continue to furnish the equipment for any period of medical need for the remainder of the reasonably useful lifetime of the equipment. And there are no exceptions to that mandate, to that provision in the statute. So if a beneficiary does move to another part of the country, the supplier is still responsible for continuing to furnish the equipment. And obviously that might be a little hard if, it's from one side of the country to the other. So there are different things that the supplier could do. They could, if it's an oxygen concentrator, particularly a portable oxygen concentrator or even a stationary one, that's something that can be transported with the beneficiary. They could let them take the concentrator with them, and then they could send them through the mail the tubing and cannulas And if there's any servicing that needs to be done, they can contract with a supplier in the new area to do the servicing. Or they could work with another supplier in the other area to set the beneficiary up once they get to the new area with their stationary oxygen equipment, and the new supplier would provide the equipment and would provide the replacement supplies, et cetera. And since it's the responsibility of the supplier who received the 36 payments, they would have to reimburse that supplier for furnishing those services. That is what this new payment rule essentially is. It's 3 years of payments for beneficiaries who use oxygen equipment for 3 years or more. The supplier is paid up front for the first 3 years, but their responsibility continues after the 36 payments have been made till the end of the reasonably useful lifetime. So the way you need to look at it is the supplier is paid up front in advance 3 years worth of payments for a 5-year responsibility. So that is, you know, the law of the land now. That is the new payment law. You know, the main part of this was repealing the transfer of ownership, so suppliers did not have to lose title to equipment at the end of the 3-year period. But going with that are the responsibilities of the supplier who keeps the equipment to continue furnishing the equipment for the rest of the reasonably useful lifetime. And there are no exceptions, like I said, for beneficiaries who relocate. And the maintenance and servicing issue was something that was discussed in detail in the interim final rule, so I would invite you to read that. And I would also let you know that, you know, the comment period for that rule continues till 5 p.m. on December 29th. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill.
Okay, and we'll take our next question.
Hi, my name is Joey Graham, and I have a question about the reasonably useful lifetime. Many oxygen suppliers frequently swap out the equipment in lieu of doing the service at the patient's residence. And so throughout the 36-month payment period, the concentrator might be swapped out multiple times. I was wondering, does that useful lifetime restart every time the concentrator is swapped out, or is it still based on the initial date of service?
Yeah, hi, this is Joel Kaiser again. That's something that has not been specifically addressed in our guidelines yet. I would point out that we will be issuing revisions to the Internet-only manual, specifically Chapter 20 of the Claims Processing Manual that also includes all the payment rules and instructions related to those rules and policies. This is a question that we're well aware of related to reasonably useful lifetime. The regulation currently states that the reasonably useful lifetime actually can be longer than 5 years if a carrier determines that the reasonably useful lifetime should be longer than 5 years, but in no case can it be less than 5 years. That the only way it can be less than 5 years is if CMS issues program instructions indicating a reasonably useful lifetime of less than 5 years. So generally the default is 5 years. And what it says in the regulation is that the reasonably useful lifetime is based not on the age of the equipment, but the date that the equipment is initially furnished. So now the question comes, what does that mean when the equipment was initially furnished? Does that mean the exact piece of equipment, or does it mean the type of equipment in general, such as oxygen equipment? And all I could say at this point is that we'll be providing additional clarification on that in the very near future, either through one of our MedLearn Matters articles or through a web posting. So there will be guidance on that coming in the near future. We know it's a very important issue for suppliers, and we're going to get that out. We have to, you know, go through the channels of clearing the final policy. But we know that reasonably useful lifetime now has, you know, another meaning with this legislation. Before it was just a means of determining when it's reasonable to replace equipment based on the lifetime, usual lifetime of equipment. Now it has a meaning in that the supplier is bound to continue furnishing the equipment until the end of that lifetime. So we know it's a matter of utmost importance to suppliers, and we will be providing clarification in the very near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel.
And we'll take our next question.
Good afternoon. This is Jerry Francisco of Apria Healthcare, and I have a couple of questions. My first question is a continuation of the reasonable useful lifetime, And for our patients, wherein we had first delivered the equipment prior to 1-1 of 03, our understanding is that we can supply the patient with a new piece of rental equipment and we can start a brand new capped rental episode. If our understanding is correct, what type of documentation would we need to submit to the DME MAC, and is a new CMN required in such situation?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. That's another really important issue we're dealing with right now, and also one that we'll be providing guidance on in the very near future. That is one that clearly is laid out in the rule. However, we're still processing through exactly how suppliers will be billing in those situations, how the claims will be processed in those situations. We're getting close to having the final answers that we need in order to provide guidance to suppliers on how to bill in these situations, and hopefully we'll be getting that out in the very near future.
Thank you. And my second question is in reference to billing for monthly fills. It is our understanding that we can bill one unit of fills and that we will be paid a flat monthly fee. Prior to the DRA for oxygen, there was a mechanism to bill Medicare for high or low liter flow patients in which reimbursement would either be upped or reduced depending on certain modifiers. But they were modifiers appended to rental HCPCS codes. With the billing of monthly fills, will there be a similar mechanism?
Hi. The adjustment for patients that use more than 4 liters a minute and the reduction in payment that applies to patients who use less than a liter per minute, those apply to the monthly payment amount for oxygen and oxygen equipment. They don't apply to the oxygen contents fee. The oxygen contents fee is a monthly payment for furnishing oxygen contents, and it's not a one payment per delivery. It is the payment for the patient's monthly oxygen contents needs. So there is just one payment amount. It doesn't adjust based on liters per minute of oxygen used. It is one payment amount. We have been paying this payment amount in limited circumstances in the past when a beneficiary's owned their own oxygen equipment. But of course now it's going to there's going to be many more payments for oxygen contents. Now that we have these new rules for payment after the cap. But again, there is no similar adjustment for, a volume adjustment for the oxygen contents. That only was mandated in the law for the oxygen and oxygen equipment payment that's made during the 36-month period.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Tina?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, just remind them if their question has been asked to remove themselves from queue. And we're going to limit each question, each participant, to one question so that we allow enough opportunity for the attendees to ask a question.
Okay. And if you would like to remove yourself from the queue, if your question has been answered, it is star 1 to ask a question and star 2 to remove yourself. And we'll take our next question.
Yes, this is Lewis from Fort Lauderdale. My question, I've been hearing a lot on provider responsibilities. I have a question on a beneficiary responsibilities with respect to their coinsurances and deductibles. If we have a beneficiary who absolutely refuses to pay their coinsurance and deductibles, are you saying we're obligated to continue to do business with them?
This is Cigna Government Services. Unfortunately, we don't have any additional information. I'm not sure if CMS has any to add in.
And then when we're going to get it?
Well, I can tell you what the law requires. This is Joel Kaiser again. The law does speak in terms of the supplier being responsible to continue furnishing the equipment after the 36-month period.
I'm talking about from the first month on.
Yeah, I know. And what I was going to say was that we had the same issue that was brought up during the rulemaking process for the Deficit Reduction Act. And we consulted with our general counsel, and our general counsel advised us that, you know, the payment rules are the payment rules. They're, the plain reading of the statute, this had to do with the title transfer. Someone during the rulemaking asked, maybe several people commented on, do we need to transfer title after the 36 months if the payment still owes us co-payments, co-insurance payments? And the answer is that, yes, the law requires you to transfer title on the first day following the 36th payment. Now, obviously, collecting co-payments is something that you need to deal directly with the beneficiary about, you know, through whatever your normal means of doing that are, through collection agencies or however you do that. But the law, you know, and under the DRA, did require the transfer of title after 36 months. Now that's been changed. The new law per MIPA is that there's no transfer of title, but the supplier must continue to furnish the equipment. So I would guess that GC would give us the same answer they gave us on the title transfer, that this is a requirement in the law, and that, you know, there's no exception provided in a case where a beneficiary has outstanding coinsurance payments. So that would be my answer to that question.
And we'll take our next question.
Hi, my name is Julie. I'm calling from Medical Billing Solutions. I have several questions. I was under the impression that there had to be a 90-day required O2 concentrated check for the accreditation companies. And now I hear that there's a 6-month check. Has that changed?
This is Rhonda. The accreditation companies may require something different, as where states may require something different. The thing to remember is that you must be in compliance with any state, local, or federal guidelines that must be in place. So if that is a requirement based on accreditation to meet your accreditation guidelines, then my thoughts would be that, yes, you would have to maintain that as well.
So there would be no way for us to charge you guys or be able to send in a claim. That would be something that would be an additional loss to the supplier along with all the loss that we have now?
As it stated, like I said, the only maintenance would be the every 6 months. That would be the only maintenance payment that would be made.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question, and we do ask that you pose one question due to time constraints. Caller, your line is open.
Hi, my name is Bob in Crystal River, Florida. Are we there?
Yes, go ahead, Bob.
Oh, okay. I have a question concerning the break of service. It states in the MLN Matters SE 0840 that temporary breaks due to hospital stays and facility stays aren't going to impact the 36-month rental cap. However, in Florida in particular, and I'm sure elsewhere, we have all of these wonderful people with HMOs running around and taking these patients from traditional Medicare to the HMO, and then after 6 or 8 months they get fed up with it and they want to come back to traditional Medicare. What happens in those situations? And how do we tell if the patient's been on oxygen for, say, for example, 30 months prior to going to an HMO?
Okay. If you don't mind, we're going to ask that if CMS could address this one in regards to the, you said break in service, patient going from an HMO or?
Primarily from an HMO back to traditional
Medicare.
Yeah, hi, this is Joel Kaiser again.
Hi, Joel.
Hi. When the issue of the definition of continuous use first came up in when we were implementing the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1987, when the first cap rental DME payment rules were established, it said pay no more than 15 months of continuous use. And so we had to define through regulations what we meant by continuous use. And in the regulations way back when, we determined that, continuous use meant uninterrupted use of the equipment, including temporary interruptions that were defined by us as interruptions of less than 60 days plus the days remaining in the last month that we paid for. So that's the key, is if the break has been less than 60 days plus the last plus the days in, of the last month we paid for, then it's a temporary interruption. And so, you know, we don't start the counting over. We don't stop the counting of the continuous months. However, if it is an interruption of more than 60 days plus the days remaining in the last rental month that we paid for, then that is a, you know, that is not a temporary interruption. That is a break in continuous use. And just like for the cap rental items we've been paying for since 1989, the, you know, that would be a break in continuous use for oxygen as well. When we did the DRA rulemaking and that, you know, subsequently the MIPA rulemaking, we adopted the same definition of continuous use for oxygen purposes. And so if it's a break in use of more than 60 days plus the days remaining in the last rental payment, we start a new 36-month rental period.
Thank you very much.
And we'll take our next question.
Hi, this is Brian from Texas. I had a question on the contents, the liquid versus gaseous contents. There had been some back and forth that CMS had decided that the contents for liquid was going to be exactly the same for the gaseous contents, and yet the cost of providing the liquid contents was so much more, and the original contents on the fee schedule was approximately $154, depending on what state you were at. And I was curious to know if they had made a final ruling that the contents for liquid was going to be in that neighborhood of the $154, and then the gaseous contents was going to be around the $77.
Yeah, hi, Joel Kaiser here again. $154, that would be the quote for both the stationary contents and the portable contents. To give you a little bit of the history, we used to have one monthly payment for both stationary and portable. It included, included both, and that was around $154. What we did as part of implementing the Deficit Reduction Act through the rulemaking was we used an authority in the statute that was first added to the statute by the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. It was an authority to establish separate payment classes for oxygen and oxygen equipment. That authority came with a stipulation that any change in the payment classes had to be done in a way so that it was annually budget neutral. And so what we saw when we were implementing the Deficit Reduction Act, we saw a need to refine the payment classes for oxygen. Namely, we added a new portable oxygen class for oxygen-generating portable equipment, stationary concentrators, transfilling equipment. That new class has a higher add-on payment for that newer technology. The other thing we did was we took that combined stationary and portable contents fee and we split it into two new fees, one for just the stationary and one for just the portable, so that suppliers would get paid, you know, if they only provided stationary contents or if they only provided portable contents, they would get that one amount. If they provided both, then, of course, 77, I think 45 is the fee. 77.45 plus 77.45 would be the combined $154 or whatever it comes out to. So if you deliver both stationary and portable contents, that is the beneficiary is using both stationary liquid or gaseous and portable liquid or gaseous, then you can bill for both contents fees and you would get paid both. However, if you only provide one or the other, either stationary, they're using liquid or gaseous stationary and they don't use portable, or they use, you know, some other technology, or if they use a concentrator and they use portable gaseous or liquid, then you would only bill and receive payment for one contents payment. So it's one payment for stationary, one payment for portable. As far as the fee, at the same time, you know, before this change, we had a fee of $21 a month for portable contents. If the beneficiary only needed portable contents, we only paid $21. And so that was something that we saw as a problem. So using that authority, we increased the payment for that class to $77. So now, you know, before it was a combined payment if you were furnishing stationary contents. We paid you for the stationary and the portable at the same time. If, however, you provided only portable contents, it was only a $21 fee. So we saw a problem there. We increased the payments to $77. So now combined, it's it's pretty much the same that was paid before for the combined, but now if you only provide the portable, it's a much higher reimbursement. So that was something that was addressed through that authority. That authority, again, does require that it be annually budget neutral. So each year we have to apply an offset to the monthly oxygen and oxygen equipment payment to pay for those new payment classes and the increase in the payment for the portable contents. And I believe the adjustment this year was about $3 or 3%, something like that. And again, it's to pay for the higher portable contents fee, and it's also to pay for the higher payment for the newer technology portable equipment. The law did allow us to establish the payment classes, but it did say that we had to do it so that it was in a annually budget neutral fashion. So to make a long story short, it's $77.45 for stationary contents. It's $77.45 for portable contents. If you're providing both, then you bill both and you get both payments.
So even if a patient is liquid and they're filling their portable from their stationary, because they are using portability, you're going to bill both the stationary and the portable?
Absolutely not. If they're not using stationary liquid, then you shouldn't be billing for stationary liquid. If they're using a concentrator and they're only using liquid for their portable oxygen needs, you should only be billing for the portable oxygen content.
But if they have their base that they use when they're at home and their Helios portable liquid contents has to be filled from their base when they have to leave the house, then they're basically filling their portable from their base that they use when they're not leaving the house.
Yeah, if they're using liquid oxygen as both their stationary and their portable, then you can bill for both contents fees.
Okay, and on the payment, though, does not necessitate us actually having to deliver to the patient's house. When we accept contents, we're accepting that we will supply them, whether the patient comes to get their tanks or their liquid or whether we go to the house. Is that correct?
No, I'm sorry. The supplier standards do require delivery, so you would have to deliver the oxygen to the patient, and that's basically what the service is. That's what the $77.45 is for. It's for delivering contents to the patient, to their home. So it doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that you go out every month. It just means that you get paid once a month for continuing to provide their contents. You may go out once every 2 months or however often you go out, but you do get paid monthly.
So we're going to get that $77.45 every month whether we deliver contents or not?
As long as they have the contents that they need for that month. Mm-hmm. If they're on liquid or gaseous stationary or liquid or gaseous portable, as long as they have the tanks, the canisters in their home, they've been delivered, then you can bill for it. If you delivered them, you can bill for them monthly.
Because my understanding, I guess that was what the clarification was, that if we provide tanks to them in February, then we're going to be able to bill $77.45 in January as well as February and get paid for both? So this is going to be a recurring fee that we're going to be able to bill monthly after January the 1st?
Right. After the 36-month period, you can bill for the monthly contents delivery, and the monthly contents. So it doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean you have to drive out at least once a month. It just means that they have the contents.
We're agreeing to continue to provide them contents.
Well, yeah. Not only are you agreeing, but you actually you must provide the contents. If you receive payment for the liquid or gaseous equipment in the month 36. You must continue to provide the quote, equipment and also deliver the content.
Okay, because I think most suppliers were thinking we were only going to get the $77.45 only if you made one delivery, and if you didn't make a delivery every month, you didn't get to charge that fee.
No, that's not true. The way to look at it is it's paying for the monthly contents needs of the beneficiary. It doesn't mean you have to go out every month. It just means that, you know, if you go out and deliver a, a bunch of tanks 1 month and it's, you know, enough tanks for 2 months, then you only have to go out every 2 months. But you need to go out as often as you need to go out for to get the Medicare beneficiary the tanks that they need.
Okay.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
And we'll now take our next question.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead with your question.
Yes, ma'am. My name's Debbie, and I'm calling from Texas. And my question is, if we take on an O2 patient from another service area that has had oxygen equipment for, say, 20 months, and there is 16 months left payable, will we be able to bill that last remaining 16 months, or will that payment go to the previous provider?
Yeah, that would be a situation where the previous supplier, per our regulations as they're currently written, the beneficiary moves out of their normal service area. They are no longer obligated to continue furnishing the equipment. The new supplier if a new supplier furnishes the equipment, the new supplier would start billing for the monthly payments. They would be able to receive the first payment on the first day, that is the day after the last month that Medicare paid for.
All right. Thank you so much.
And we'll take our next question.
Yes. This is Lorraine Fourier. I just wanted to follow up on a comment in regards to the maintenance and service. Is the intent that the billing would be done at the 6 month, but the provider could provide that maintenance and service at any point in time during that 6 months? It would be difficult to be at the home exactly on the same day every 6 month period. Is that the intent of that?
Yeah, hi, this is Joel, Lorraine. The intent is that, the oxygen supplier provides the equipment for 36 months, concentrator or transfilling equipment, which is what this maintenance and servicing fee applies to. Then 6 months later, we're paying for a supplier to go out and just to make sure the equipment is okay and in good working order and to provide any general maintenance that's needed. It's mostly a service of checking the equipment to make sure it's going to continue for another 6 months. We discussed this during the DRA rulemaking, and we discussed it in the MIPA rulemaking. It's definitive time frame. It's a checking of equipment every 6 months. So it's not any time during the 6 months. It's 6 months following the 36 months, the supplier goes back, or a supplier goes into the beneficiary's home. Okay, it's been 6 months since the 36th payment has been made, since the 36th rental month. I've got to check the equipment. I'm going to make sure it's in good working order, and there's no major problems. It's going to be okay for the next 6 months, and then that payment is made. Then, if we continue this policy beyond 2009, then it would be exactly 6 months later that the supplier could go out and do the same service, and again, we would pay for that six-month anniversary. It's not like the old cap rental maintenance and servicing where you paid for a six-month period and they can provide any and all servicing during that six-month period. This is really a point-in-time payment to go out every 6 months and check on the equipment.
So that means that the date would vary. I mean, because obviously you wouldn't be there on the exact same date. So it was June, you could be out January 5th or 10th or 12th, whatever it may be, of the next year, and 6 months later, and that's the date you would bill, the actual date you went to the patient's home.
Yeah, suppliers are going to, obviously have their scheduling issues as far as when they can get to the beneficiary's home. But as long as it's within a reasonable time, then, okay. I mean, it doesn't have to be the exact anniversary date, but it should be approximately 6 months after the last time it was done. And we have solicited for comments on this policy and whether or not it's reasonable to continue. So for 2009, we're going to be making one payment per beneficiary. That is that first maintenance and servicing payment 6 months after the 36th month. The next 6 month period could start for any beneficiary would be January 1, 2010. And, you know, at this point, whether we're going to continue this policy as a permanent policy beyond 2009, that decision has not been made yet. We're going to consider the comments that are received on the interim final rule, and then at some point in 2009 we'll issue a final rule, and it will address whether these payments will continue permanently beyond 2009.
And there was on that E-1340, there's a modifier that is used? Or not?
There is no modifier.
Okay, so I guess the question is how do you know what that's for? But the provider just bills one or two units of service, E-1340.
No. We're going to be providing the billing guidance on that in the very near future. Just to give you an advance notice, what the billing instructions are going to say is use the code for the equipment, the concentrator for the transfilling equipment. Use the HCPCS code for the equipment plus the MS HCPCS modifier. If you use those combined, equipment and the MS modifier, the payment would be automatically at the 2 units, the 30 minutes.
And one other clarification on an interruption or break in service that you mentioned.
I'm sorry, I do apologize, Lorraine, but we will have to move on because we do have quite a few questions in queue.
As a reminder, if your question has been answered, please press star 2. Also, we do ask that you limit yourself to one question due to time constraints and to allow others to pose their questions. We appreciate your cooperation. And caller, your line is open.
I have a question about portable concentrator, the E-1392. This is Jan from Texas.
Okay, Jan, go ahead with your question.
Does that piece of equipment cap out?
And I'm sorry, it was code. What was the code again?
E-1392, the portable concentrator.
Yes, it does. I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, it does cap out.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
This is Susan Gore in Savannah.
I'm sorry, say your name again for me.
Susan in Savannah.
Thank you, Susan. Go ahead with your question.
This may be a dumb question. This maintenance and service applies only to the concentrator?
Yes, that is correct.
So we will still be able to bill for portable systems? We'll still get a monthly fee for portable systems?
You will only get content for that portable.
Okay, okay. And the code for those contents?
I think I referenced them early.
But the E-0441?
Through E-0444.
Okay. And will that be, is that in the oxygen chapter now?
Yes, you can actually, yes, as far as codes and just current billing and coverage guidelines, yes, you can go to the oxygen LCD to find that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Hi, I have a question about the DME benefit for in the home. It's my understanding that equipment is covered for use within the home. How about these patients who have portability that are taking their portable tanks to the doctor's office, to the casinos, to church, to bingo? Since they're not using it within the home, is there a point where we do not have to provide it to them for outside the home?
Yeah, hi, this is Joel Kaiser. Regardless of the change in payment rules, the responsibility for providing portable equipment is the same as it always has been. Yes, durable medical equipment is a benefit for equipment used in a home, but the idea behind portable oxygen is it's a therapeutic benefit. It gets the person who would otherwise be bed or chair confined up and out of their bed, up and out of their chair. There really aren't any limits on how far away from the chair or bed they can ambulate. It's been understood that this is a benefit for portable oxygen, to allow the beneficiary to be portable. And that doesn't mean they can't leave their home. Just like we've always said for power wheelchairs, you don't, you know, just, you know, we pay for power wheelchairs that are used in the home. That doesn't mean that you can't take the power wheelchair out of the home. Obviously, we, you know, we'll pay for repairs of patient-owned power wheelchairs that are mainly due to wear and tear of use of the equipment outside the home. So with the oxygen benefit, you know, how DME payments worked, it was based on supplier charges for many, many years until a fee schedule was enacted and implemented in 1989. That fee schedule amount is updated every year on an annual basis. So suppliers' charges for portable oxygen have been accounted for all these years, and there's nothing that has changed. The supplier should continue furnishing the same quantities of portable oxygen that they've been furnishing in the past. Just because there's been recent changes in payment laws doesn't mean that the benefit has changed. It doesn't mean that you have the right to, start withholding contents from beneficiaries, different from how you have in the past, because the payment amounts in effect today are based on those historic payments. We never heard any access issues, any problems with beneficiaries in terms of, you know, oxygen and going outside their home. So that shouldn't change today. Suppliers should be providing the same services, the same quantity of contents that they provided in the past. If they are not, then they're not providing what our payments are based on. Our payments are based on monthly portable contents used by the beneficiary. There is no you can't leave the home requirement. So, nothing has changed in that regard. And supplier practices in terms of, you know, furnishing contents should not change.
And we'll now take our next question.
Yes, this is Anthony in Virginia. My question is a licensure issue. You're saying if these patients move at the 36-month cap, if I can't find a supplier to take care of them, then it's my responsibility to do this. Pharmacies can't dispense across state lines. Some of the states are so restricted with their DME license that, especially Tennessee, you have to have a facility located inside the boundaries of the state of Tennessee. So how am I supposed to supply oxygen to other patients in other states when they move if, you know, there's licensure laws and then there's boards of pharmacies? That means I'd have to have a license in every state that somebody had moved to.
Yeah. Again, what the law mandates is the supplier who receives the 3-year upfront payments, the 36-month payments, or the 36-month payment must continue to furnish the equipment for the remainder of the reasonable use lifetime.
But I can't, I can't go against state statutes in other states. I mean, you're forcing me to provide something to another state that I will be held accountable for. State law tells me that I've got to have that license in that state, and if I'm not licensed in that state to practice, then how am I supposed to do that?
One thing is for sure, that again, there are no exceptions to this requirement that the supplier is responsible for continuing to furnish the equipment. That doesn't mean that they, again, I addressed this earlier in the call, that doesn't mean they have to physically provide the concentrator or the liquid or gaseous equipment.
But if I've got a company that doesn't support, that says, okay, you know, we're going to charge you $400 a month to take care of that patient, you're expecting me to pull $400 out of my pocket to pay another provider in another state, that's well above and beyond, you know, what I got reimbursed monthly from, you know, Medicare. So
I would fight your local congressperson because that's, you know, that's, you can't in any way be, you know, released from this statutory requirement. It's a statutory requirement. So, I'd write to your local congressperson to express your concerns, but that is the current law.
And now what about you? A while ago you said to my, you know, with the oxygen requirements, what happens if they go from 5 liters to 7 liters? I was paid at a 5-liter rate. Now after 36-month cap, their condition got worse. Different machine. One concentrator produces, some of them produce 3 liters, some produce 5. Then you've got 10-liter concentrators. So what are we supposed to do for that?
Yeah. What you're probably talking about there is a change in the patient's condition. as with DME in general, if there's a change in the patient's condition and they need different equipment, we would pay for that. So if you need to replace their concentrator with a concentrator that now meets their new medical condition, then Medicare would pay for that. We'd start a new 36-month period.
Thank you, Anthony. We're going to go ahead and take our next question.
Yes, hello. My name is Martha from Orlando, Florida, and I did not understand the question that was brought up by the gentleman from Apria, as it made reference to oxygen concentrators that were initiated prior to 2003. Did that or do those also meet the cap rental? Did I understand that correctly?
And I'm sorry, you're referring to the question in regards to if it was provided prior to 2003?
Right. I thought that was the date that he spoke to Joel about. Concentrators that were initiated in place prior to 2003, did I pick up the wrong date? That did not meet the cap rental policy?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question once more?
Okay, the gentleman from Apria was speaking about the oxygen concentrators or any of the oxygen equipment that was initiated placed prior to 2003. Some policy that would omit these concentrators, these beneficiaries from the cap rental policy of 2006. Did I misunderstand that? Prior to 2003, or maybe he said prior to 2004.
Are you talking about the reasonable useful lifetime?
Yes.
Yeah, the reasonable useful lifetime is the regulation is that it's 5 years. That's the default reasonable useful lifetime is 5 years from the date that the equipment is initially furnished. What the DRA, the 36-month cap, which doesn't go away with MIPA, is that it was implemented in a way that it applied, the cap didn't start until January 1, 2006. If you were using oxygen equipment before January 1, 2006, then we may have paid for past rental payments, but the 36-month cap, those rental payments don't apply towards that cap. The rental cap starts the earliest it can start for anyone was January 1, 2006. However, reasonable useful lifetime was not affected by that cap and that, starting of the cap in January 2006. So if you were using equipment prior to January 1, 2006, the five-year useful lifetime could have ended prior to the end of that 36-month cap. And again, we're going to be issuing guidance in the near future on how you bill in those situations for the replacement equipment.
And we'll take our next question.
Yes, hi. My name is Sylvia. I'm calling from Professional Medical. I have a question regarding the break in service guidelines, since oxygen's never been a cap rental item. Your guidance states that if there's a break in service of greater than 60 days due to an inpatient status, an HMO, hospice, et cetera, the provider will receive a new cap rental period. Guidance from the DME MACs state that if the need for oxygen was there during the break in service, a new cap rental period will not be granted. This is a really important issue for providers. And I was wondering if you could clarify break in service versus break in need.
Yeah, hi, it's Joel Kaiser. It's the same as it always has been for other cap rental DME. It's really a break in Medicare Part B payments. If you go into an inpatient setting, for example, you may still need oxygen, and I'm sure you will, but we're not making any Part B payments. The DME benefit, in other words, is not in effect. When you come out of the inpatient stay, or you've come out of a SNF, or you come back from an HMO, then the Part B payment starts again. If it was a break of more than 60 days plus the days in the last rental payment period, then it would start a new 36-month period. But if you still need oxygen during the break, it is still a break, and if it's more than 60 days plus those days in the last rental month, then it starts a new 36-month period. It's the same rules as have been in place for years for other cap rental DME.
And we'll take our next question.
Hi, this is Lisa from Mercy, and the question I have is about the portable monthly content fee. Let's say, for example, we only deliver one e-tank refill, and our usual and customary charge for that refill is $15. Do we have to charge that $15, or can we charge a new fee of a monthly portable content fee of like $90?
What? I'm not sure I understand the question. What's the difference between the 15 and the 90?
The 15 would be our usual and customary charge per tank. And, you know, with that, you said the monthly contents is a $77.45 monthly fee.
Right.
Regardless of when you deliver them, as long as it's the usage.
Right. Your charge in this case is going to be your charge for providing oxygen contents for the beneficiary for 1 month. And includes the delivery of the contents to the patient's home. Doesn't have to be a delivery every month, but what you're basically doing is you're basically charging your average monthly charge, your average monthly cost for furnishing the portable equipment to the contents or the stationary contents to the patient for that 1 month. It is not a per quantity of oxygen charge. It is a monthly charge, and so whatever your charge is for furnishing contents for patients for a month, that's what you would bill as your charge.
And we'll take our next question.
Yes, thank you. This is Russ Varner, MediQuip in Dalhart, Texas. Is there any consideration for high-use patients on the portable oxygen after the 36 months? Some patients that we have use as much as 5 tanks per week, and they'll no doubt continue to use that after the 36 months. So what's your situation with that?
Well, Medicare's payment for durable medical equipment are basically, you know, if the long-standing history is, if you're talking about, you know, a HCPCS code that has a variety of different, you know, ranges of products within it that basically do the same thing, or if you're talking about a monthly payment for oxygen contents, or if you're talking about, an arm cast. What you're talking about is Medicare's allowed payment amount, and you could have situations where your costs for a beneficiary are higher in some cases than they normally are, or you could also have situations where your costs for a beneficiary are lower than they normally are. Some patients may need a lot of contents, and you get paid $77.45 for that patient. Some patients may need not very many contents, and you still get paid $77.45 for that patient. You know, there's going to be some situations where your costs for a particular patient are higher than they normally are. Likewise, there's going to be situations where your costs are lower than they normally are. So Medicare's payment is always, you know, a payment for a service. It's not based on specific quantities of items or specific quantities or supplies or particular products. It is a payment for that service. And, you know, like I said, sometimes, like with an arm cast, we have one payment for a cast. It's basically the average cost of a physician's casting supplies. Some patients may need a lot of, you know, large patient with a large arm may, you know, need a lot of casting material. But you're still going to get paid that one payment that we make for that cast. And you may have a very small patient who needs a very small amount of casting materials. Then, you know, you're going to probably get paid more than your costs. And so, you know, it's the way, you know, it works is we don't pay for particular specific products. We don't pay for particular specific quantities in the case of oxygen contents. It's a payment amount. Sometimes your costs are going to be a little higher than they normally are. Sometimes they're going to be lower than they normally are. So it's supposed to all average out. And that's the way Medicare payment for pretty much all DME paid for and identified by HCPCS code works. And that's been the same since the reasonable charge days, and it continues today under the fee schedule.
And we'll take our next question.
Yes. This is Tammy Johnson in Manila. And I know we're running this portable in the ground, but I do have a question about it. How long can we bill for portable O2 contents after the 36 rental month? What if they have O2 for 10 more years? Can we bill 10 years once a month for their portable contents, one unit of $77.45?
Yes. You can bill the contents for as long as you're furnishing the content service. There's no limit on that. If however the beneficiary elects to get new equipment at the end of the reasonable useful lifetime period, they could switch to a concentrator if they wanted to, or if they continue using liquid or gaseous system, then we would start the 36-month payment, which includes payment for content. At the end of the 36-month payment for that next generation of equipment, then the contents payments could start again after the 36-month cap.
And we'll take our next question.
Hello?
Yes, caller, your line is open.
Yes, I have a question. This is in regard to, this is more intricate question, not just a general, on the portable backups that have been billed along with the concentrators. The concentrators cap out. We are now billing the content as opposed to the backup system. Do we have to get a new CMN to be put on file since it will be a new code?
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not sure that I understand your question. Could you repeat it for us just to make sure, I guess, we're on the same line?
Okay, concentrators are the E1390. The backup systems that have been built along with them is the EO431. But as of January 1st, the capped concentrators, after that we can only bill content for the portable systems, which would be EO441 through the EO444. Do we need a new CMN on file with the new content code in order to be able to bill and receive the $77.45 fee?
Tammy, does the patient already have the portable? Are we paying you currently for the portable equipment for the...
Yes, for the backup, for the EO431.
Now, we don't pay for backup equipment. We would pay for portable for those patients who are mobile within the home and require that portable system. If they have the portable and the portable has capped out, yes, we will continue to pay the contents for the portable.
So we just switch the code to transmit? We don't have to get a separate CMN with the new content code on it?
That is correct. As long as the portable equipment is already on file, there's no need to change it for the contents.
That is great. That saves a lot of wear and tear and a lot of barraging the physicians.
Joel Kaiser here. Just to clarify, you're asking when you stop billing for the portable add-on payment, 431, and with the 37th month, you start billing for the contents code, do you need a new CMN? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay, then yeah, I agree.
That we will not need one?
You do not need one. The medical need for the portable oxygen has already been established. You're just now billing for the contents, which the payment rules allow you to do for furnishing the contents after the 36-month cap. The patient still receiving the same equipment they always have. It's just that, you know, the 36-month is when the equipment payments stop and the content payments
begin.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, you know, that was clarified, so if we did need a new CMN, that, you know, we could get a head start to get them into the physicians.
Thank you so much for your question.
And we'll now take our next question.
Hi, this is Christine from Tennessee. My question is regarding supplies. Will we be able to bill for any tubing, cannula, humidifiers, or is that going to just go with our monthly service fee?
There will be no additional payment for the supplies. It's all included.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we'll take our next question.
Yes, this is Judy in Oklahoma. I had a question on the concentrators. Whenever we have a patient that was set up prior to 2003, and, you know, at least 2 years. Well, and at the end of 2008, it's 5 years. Do we start, set them up with a new concentrator and start again, or how do we go about taking care of that question?
Are you referring to the reasonable use of lifetime replacement?
Yes.
Yeah, again, that's the third time we've been asked about that, and it is addressed in the interim final rule and the preamble discussion of that rule. And as far as implementing that, you know, as you know, we're in the implementation phase. We were in the rulemaking phase. Now we're in the implementation phase. We're going to be providing instructions in the near future for suppliers to tell them how to bill in those situations. The instructions, the guidance is not out there yet, but it will be in the near future.
And we'll take our next question. Caller, your line is open. Caller, your line is open.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Judy, and I'm also from Oklahoma. And I've been taking notes on billing the contents, and I think I understand that. But if I have a patient that has an E1390, the gaseous concentrator, and the EL431, which is the gaseous portable unit, and say they've had it for 7 years, is there any reimbursement after 1/1/09 for the E1390?
No, that would be maintenance and service.
Okay. So this $77.45 is a reimbursement for contents only?
Correct.
Whether it's liquid or gaseous?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and just a reminder, it doesn't apply for concentrators or transfilling equipment. It applies to liquid or gaseous equipment. That is, you know, oxygen tanks, oxygen canisters, oxygen modalities that require delivery of contents.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead with your question.
This is Heather in Alabama. Again, we were going to ask who is responsible for establishing the provider if the beneficiary moves during the 36-month rental period. Are we responsible or is the patient responsible?
Both would be responsible.
Okay, and if they are accepted and say, again, the question has come up, but I didn't get it clarified. If they're accepted after 20 months, are they going to just pick up at the 16 months? And only be paid for the 16 months?
Yes, that will be it. You will be paid the remainder.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question.
Hi, this is Lori, and I've got a question, and this question is prior to a cap. You know, if you start out and you're just billing portability, the EO431, and a lot of times, you know, we'll get a patient who wants to convert to us because we do a home fill system, for example, and that goes to billing at a K0738. And when I start billing a K0738 after, let's say, like 12 months of oxygen rentals already occurred, is that month number one for the K0738, or does it start out at month 13 if I've already done, you know, 12 months of billing or another company has?
Okay, let me make sure I understand your question. The patient initially started out on the E0431.
Right.
And is this just during the 36-month rental, and then at some point you switched to the home fill system, the K0738?
Right. So when I switch from, you know, tanks over to the home fill system and I switch the code, does my billing on the K0738 then start out after the 12 months as, you know, month 13, or does that restart it for the portability at month number one?
Hi, it's Joel Kaiser again. I would like to remind folks that as part of the DRA rulemaking, we do have a regulation that prevents switching equipment for existing patients. You obviously have the right to, you know, provide any of the modalities for new patients. But what the DRA, when we implemented the DRA, the regulations were established that there can be no switching of equipment. So you can't switch from one modality to another, for example, from portable gaseous equipment to a transfilling system, unless the physician orders that switch or the beneficiary chooses to upgrade to that newer technology and signs an advanced beneficiary notice as a record that they choose to upgrade to that newer technology. Those are two situations where you can change equipment. There's also a miscellaneous clause where CMS or a carrier can grant an exception to the rule in particular circumstances, as you know, the circumstances merit the switch. But generally, you should not be switching equipment for existing patients. Now, to respond to your specific question, it is a 36-month cap on portable equipment. Regardless of the number of times the patient switches from one modality to another, it's also a 36-month cap, a separate 36-month cap for the stationary equipment, regardless, again, of how many times the patient switches from one modality to another. We don't restart the 36-month payment every time the patient switches from one modality to another. So if a patient does elect to upgrade and signs an ABN and they upgrade from portable gaseous to a home fill system, or if the physician provides a new order that says, I want my patient to now use the home fill system, that 36-month payment, you know, period does not start anew. It continues, the supplier would just bill for the new, you know, the different equipment, the different HCPCS code the next month. And that next month would be the next of the 36 months, you know, in the sequence of the 36 months.
And we'll move on to our next questioner.
Yes, we saw some literature about doing ABNs after the 36-month on tanks. We've kind of talked about this question already about the multiple-use tanks, and I think, Joel, you already answered this, but I want to just clarify, is there any legalities to doing ABNs on people who use high cylinder volumes after the cap?
No, and that literature would not have been anything that CMS produced. The law, you know, provides for payment of consents after the cap. It says to make the payments in accordance with the standard payment rules at 1834A9. The standard payment rules are the 7745. It's a monthly payment for oxygen contents. It's not dependent on the quantity of oxygen that's provided. So there is absolutely no option for a supplier to have a beneficiary sign an ABN and charge them, you know, for extra quantities when Medicare payment already includes payment for the contents that the patient needs for that month. So that literature is erroneous and should be disregarded.
And we'll take our next question.
Hi, this is V from Texas. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead with your question.
I'm sorry. I do have a question. No one's really mentioned much about accepting assignment and ABNs, and, I mean, we hear here, I mean, we already have suppliers trying to get rid of, per se, your patients that are capping, and we keep hearing, well, as long as you, do not bill that 36-month or receive payment, that you can pretty much get rid of these patients. I mean, is that true, or is it based on you accepting the assignment the first month of their 36 months?
Yeah, hi, it's Joel Kaiser here.
Hi.
Hello. Just to be clear, you know, the DRA rulemaking addressed you know, the laws at the time that the DRA Act was in effect, you know, those amendments were in effect. And with those amendments, we established the regulation for to safeguard the beneficiary that the supplier who furnishes the oxygen equipment in the first month of rental must continue to furnish the oxygen equipment as long as it's medically necessary up to and, you know, including the 36th month. So if you furnish it to a patient in month one, you must continue to furnish it. What this new law does is it allows suppliers to, you know, keep the equipment. They don't have to transfer it after the 36 months, but they must continue to furnish it for the remainder of the reasonable useful lifetime. So now if you're an oxygen supplier and you provide the equipment in the first month, you're not only, you know, bound to continue providing it for the whole 36 months, but you're bound to continue to provide it for the whole reasonable useful lifetime period. And that applies to, you know, to all your patients. You can turn new patients away, but you cannot abandon the patients that you already are serving and have been serving. The law and the regulation bind you to continue furnishing the item to the end of the reasonable useful lifetime. So now it's not just 1 through 36 that you're bound to furnish equipment. It's month 1 through the end of the reasonable useful lifetime. And I just want to make clear that, you know, some folks have said, well, what if a supplier just elects to get out of the oxygen business? That's fine. A supplier can do that for any new patient. For any existing patient, the laws and the regulations require you to fulfill your responsibility to continue furnishing it until the end of the reasonable useful lifetime period. So absolutely, that's the case. If you provide it in month 35 and month 36 comes along and the patient still needs it, you must furnish it. You must bill, submit a claim on behalf of the beneficiary. The law and the regulation requires it. If after the 36 months the beneficiary continues to need the oxygen equipment, the law and the regulations require that you continue to furnish that equipment after the 36-month period for any period of medical need for the remainder of the reasonable useful lifetime.
This concludes our question and answer session. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Ranja Roland for any additional or closing comments.
We do want to thank everyone for attending today's Oxygen Ask the Contractor teleconference. Again, the minutes from today's call as well as a recording of today's session will be available on the Cigna Government Services website no later than December 22nd. Again, we encourage you to go out and reference Medlar Matters article SE0840, as well as you can research the Federal Register as well. We thank you again for your attendance, and you have a great day.
This concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation. You have a good day. Thank you.